Jewish Game of Conquest, Part 1. So today we're going to discuss the history of the city of Jericho, Jericho. If you hear, you look on your map over here. This is from Google Maps and I made the custom places. So the city of Jericho is not far from the Dead Sea. It's sort of in the, let's say, Middle East of the Holy Land. Get it? Middle East. All right. So that's where the city of Jericho, that's in the... It's in the northeast part of the territory of the tribe of Benjamin, of Benjamin. So that's the city of Jericho, right next to the Jordan River, actually. It's also right next to the Jordan River. Interestingly, in Hebrew, the city has two different names. We call it in English Jericho, but in Hebrew, it's named in some places where it appears in the Bible, it's called Jericho. And in some places where it appears in the Bible, it's called Jericho. The general rule is that in the five books of Moses, when the name of this city appears, because it happens to be that in the last year of the Jews traveling in the desert, so they camped in a place called the Plains of Moab, Arvos Moab, Al Yardain Jericho, right on the Jordan River, across the Jordan from Jericho. So the last year they spent over there, you know, right about to cross the Jordan to go and get into Jericho. So like that. So that's why it appears in the Chumash, and whenever the name of the city appears in the Chumash, so it's spelled as Jericho. But in the other places in the Bible where the city comes up, so it's actually pronounced Jericho. And I guess the name Jericho probably is derived from that more common way of spelling it, of Jericho, not Jericho. It's called Jericho or Jericho. What the name of the city is also a very interesting thing. We don't know exactly where the name comes from, what exactly it means, but it seems to be that it was a Canaanite name given to the city. The word Jericho is spelled like this. Yud, Resh, Yud, Chaf, Vav. And so you can see that the root of the word is Yud, Resh, Ches. Yud, Resh, Ches means the moon. So it seemed that this city was actually like the center of like some sort of moon-worshipping cult that the Canaanites had. That's like what the name of the city exactly means. Jericho. There's another interesting thing about this city. It's also known as Ir HaTamarim, the city of dates. Right? And I'll tell you a little story about dates later on. But yeah, the fruit dates, right? So it's a city of dates, or in one place in Tanakh it's known as just Tamar, date. It's a name. It's associated with dates, and they say because there were a lot of dates that were growing in that area, so that's why the city was called the city of dates. One of the commentaries wants to say, this is the I didn't write down what it was. One of the commentaries wants to say that the word Jericho, or Jericho, Reyach, in the middle of the word Reyach. Means smell, and so they say that it was called Jericho because the city had a sweet smelling smell of dates that were growing in that vicinity, so it had a nice smell. So it's called Jericho because of that nice smell. So that's like another insight into the meaning of the name Jericho.
Are these places still called this today? Like
most definitely.
Yeah.
And another thing about Jericho. The Gemara says like there's different things about it. The Gemara says that there's six different special things that happened about the city Jericho. We won't get into all of them, but one of the things that the Gemara says is that on Yom Kippur, when the Kohen Gadol would do the confession over the animals that he would offer as sacrifices, he would say, Ana Hashem, oh please Hashem, Chatasi Avisi Pashati, I sinned, whatever. So it said that the voice of the Kohen Gadol would travel so far that it would reach all the way to the city of Jericho. Which is, it's not so, from Jerusalem to Jericho, it's not so far, but it's not so close either. Right? So one of the things that the Gemara says about the city of Jericho is that when they would grind the incense for the Ketores, for the burning of the incense, in the Beis HaMikdash, they would make this huge amount. They would make 365 days worth of incense at a time, because that's how the recipe called for. And then they would split it up into, and they would burn it a little bit each day. But So when they would grind up these materials together to make the keteris, to make the incense, so the wind, I guess, would carry the smell of it so far that the Gemara says that even in Yericho, they were able to smell the grinding of the keteris. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's another reason why it's called Yericho. It has to do with smell. Maybe it has to do with the smell specifically of the keteris. I don't know. Interesting idea. Now, the city of Yericho, from a historical perspective, has the privilege, or is significant in that it was the first city in the Holy Land proper that the Jewish people conquered. It was the first city that they conquered in Eretz Yisrael, meaning across the Jordan River, on the east side of the Jordan, on the east bank of the Jordan. So, in the time of Moses already, in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, they conquered areas that became the tribal territories of Reuven, Gad, and part of Manasseh. But after Moshe Rabbeinu died, so they went into the what we consider the Holy Land proper, Eretz Yisrael proper, and then the first city that they conquered was Yericho. And we'll explain exactly how that happened and what happened in a few moments. It has the distinction of being the first city that the Jewish people conquered in the Holy Land proper. And on the other hand, more recently, it has the distinction of being the first city that the Israelis ceded to the Palestinian Authority in 1994 or 1995 under the Oslo Accords. So they gave the Palestinian Authority, they gave them authority over one area, and that area, the first area that they gave them authority over was Jericho. I think it was in 1994, 1995, something like that. So that was there's actually the Palestinian police is in charge of that area over there, but there are Jews that are allowed to go. And there's a shul, like an ancient shul in Jericho. I think people still go there nowadays. It's called the Shalom Al Yisrael Shul. It's from the Byzantine times, like the 400s, 500s, that era. And they found an inscription with a big picture or whatever, and it said on the inscription, Shalom Al Yisrael. So because of that, they call it the Shalom Al Yisrael Synagogue. Right? So the people actually can still, I think you could still go there nowadays. At least 2 years ago, they were still letting Jewish people in. You have to arrange with the army and with the police, but it was something that people went on trips to go to Jericho. So yeah, so it was the first city that the Jewish people conquered when they came into the Holy Land. And another significant thing about it was that the rabbis tell us that the city of Jericho was shkula b'chazek to all of Israel. It was as strategically fortified as the entire Holy Land. So it was, if they would conquer Jericho, so conquering Jericho meant that you already, or if you conquered it first, that means you conquered your most significant adversary first. That was the most powerful city, that was the most fortified city at the time, and that was the first one that they actually ended up conquering. There's a tradition amongst the Hasidic Ashkenaz, the 12th century German pietists of the Rebbe Chassid, others. So they have a tradition that says that Jericho was surrounded by seven walls. We'll talk about the famous walls of Jericho. So we'll say exactly that story in a minute. That's the story of a little bit of a basic understanding of Jericho. So, just to give you a back. Okay, so what happens is basically, that's it, taking up from last week's parsha, where Moshe Rabbeinu dies and the Jews are about to enter the Holy Land and Moshe Rabbeinu dies. So afterwards, that's the end of Deuteronomy. So the history continues in the next book, not from the five books of Moses, but it's the first book of the prophets. It's called the Book of Joshua. Joshua, also known as Yeshua ben Nun, he's the successor of Moshe Rabbeinu. He takes over as the leader, and he's also a prophet, and he's going to lead the people into the Holy Land. So what Joshua does is that immediately, or almost immediately after he becomes the leader, he sends some spies to go check out the city of Jericho, the city of Yericho. And this is brought in the second chapter of the book of Yeshua, the book of Joshua. It says he sends two spies that were what's it called? Secret Anoshim Raglim Cheresh. Two men who are spies. Cheresh means quiet, means like in secret spies. Who were these men? So the Bible, the Tanakh does not tell us who they were, but tradition tells us that the two men were Pinchas and Kalev. Pinchas was You know, Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron the Kohen. He was Aaron HaKohen's grandson. He himself ended up becoming the Kohen Gadol later on in history. His father was the Kohen Gadol after Aaron, Elazar HaKohen. So he was the father Kohen Gadol after Aaron. So Pinchas was a very important figure on his own right. You know, there's other traditions that tell us that Pinchas later turned into an angel. He was Eliyahu HaNavi. So Pinchas was a very important person. And Kalev, so Kalev ben Yefuna, his name is, he is from the tribe of Yehuda. And Kalev ben Yefuna was one of the original spies that Moshe Rabbeinu sent to the Holy Land. And Moshe Rabbeinu originally sent 12 spies, and 10 of them give bad report. The two that gave a good report were Yeshua, who later became the leader, and Kalev. So that you know, these two guys are, you know, not these are the heavy hitters that are going to be the spies, the important people that Yeshua sends to be spies. So he sends them to go check out Yericho and see like what's the situation there and figure out what we're supposed to do from a sort of strategic perspective. And what happens is they end up staying at the house of a woman who's described in the Tanakh as a zona. The word zona can either mean an innkeeper or it can mean a prostitute. It's a somewhat ambiguous word. Some say that she was a prostitute, that all the important kings and all the important figures of the land of Canaan used to go use her services. And so when they were with her, they would divulge all sorts of secrets to her. And because of that, she was sort of strategically important. So when they were going to stay by somebody, when these spies were going to go hang out with someone, they wanted to specifically hang out with her so they can get some of the secrets. Or if she was an innkeeper, you know, so that was the hotel that they found. So this lady, her name was Rachav. The word Rachav actually literally means wide. Okay, so her name was Rachav, and actually her house was built in the wall of the city of Jericho. Her house was inside the wall. That's going to be a significant fact in a few moments. But what happens is, so they go and they're checking out the city, and basically what happens is that somehow the king of Jericho, the king of Jericho, gets wind of the fact that the Jews sent spies to his city. And they're checking out the city. He somehow finds out about this. And so he wants to do something about it. He hears that these spies are staying by this lady's house. So he goes to this lady and he says, "Hand them over." And she says, "Oh, they're already gone." She quickly hides them in her attic. And the king says, "No, hand them over." And she says, "Oh, they're already gone." So the king sends out his soldiers to go search the perimeter of the outside of the city. The city, he closes, shuts down the city. They do a lockdown. Don't let anyone in. Don't let anyone out. And he has his soldiers checking the outskirts of the city to see if these spies are around. Meanwhile, she's hiding them in her attic. It says that she hid them. She hid them in like a pile of hay or something. I don't remember exactly where she hid them, but in flax. She hid them in stalks of flax. But Rashi says an interesting thing, that if you look carefully in the wording of when it says that she hid them, it says vatitz benoi. She hid him. But we're talking about two spies. So why does it say she said she hid him? She just says she hid them. So Rashi says that she only had to hide Kalev. She didn't have to hide Pinchas. Because we have this tradition that Pinchas is Eliyahu HaNavi. Pinchas had attained the status of an angel in certain ways. So Pinchas actually turned invisible. So no one was able to see him anyways. So she only had to hide Kalev. Anyways, she hides them. The king's soldiers are looking around. They couldn't find them. And basically what she does is she lowers them out of the city with a rope. Because I said that her house was built into the wall of the city. Right? So her house was built into the wall of the city. So they went out her window. Her window's already outside the city wall. And then they went down from the top floor or something with a rope. They came down that way. And she made them promise that when the Jews come to conquer the city of Jericho, so they're gonna save her and her family. So they said, "Yes, we promise. We're gonna save you and your family. All you have to do is put this red string outside of your window so that we'll know that you're the ones that we're supposed to save, and we'll tell the Jewish army when we come into Jericho not to kill these people that have a red string coming out of their window. Just you make sure that you don't tell this to anyone except for yourself and your family. If we find red strings all of a sudden out of every window, so we know that you've betrayed us, and then we're not going to trust you anymore, and this promise doesn't apply." So that's basically what they did. And so they promised her that they're going to save her. and the spies went back to Yeshua, reported what they saw in the city, and that's the end of that story. Now, meanwhile, this is the beginning of Yeshua's reign as the leader of the Jewish people. So, just to give you a little bit of a picture of the flow of like what was happening, the history from when Moshe Rabbeinu died until where we're getting up to right now, the conquering of the city of Jericho. So, what happens is Moshe Rabbeinu dies on what the rabbis tell us was the 7th of the month of Adar, Zayin Adar, the 7th of the month of Adar, and the Torah tells us that after he died, so the Jewish people mourned him for 30 days. So that's from 7th of Adar to the 7th of the next month, which is the month of Nisan. And on the 7th of the month of Nisan, Yeshua gets a prophecy from Hashem, and Hashem tells him that, you know, prepare the nation, we're going to be crossing the Jordan River in 3 days. I had this feel. And so, right, they're camped, you know, on the east bank of the Jordan River, and across from Jericho, and Hashem says, you're going to cross the river in 3 days. And so, 3 days later, on the 10th of Nisan, they crossed the river, and now they're on the west bank of the Jordan River. And so that's the 10th of Nisan. Now, the 10th of that was the 10th of Nisan. On the 11th of Nisan, they did a mass circumcision. All the people during the 40 years that the Jews were in the desert, so most people were not practicing circumcision, because when you're traveling, it's somewhat dangerous to have a surgery like that. So they didn't do it. So now when they came into the Holy Land, the first thing they do, Yud Aleph Nisan, they all do a circumcision, right? And then that was Yud Aleph. It takes a few days to recover. So you have Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, 3 days to recover or so. On Yud Aleph Nisan, that's when they do the Korban Pesach. And that's the day of the Erev Pesach, the day before the holiday of Pesach. That's when you do the Korban Pesach. And so they did the Korban Pesach, and then they celebrated the holiday of Pesach, 7 days, right? So that's the 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, 21 of Nisan. So 7 days of the holiday of Pesach. And then the next day, 22, the day after the holiday of Pesach, that's when the story is going to happen now of the conquering of the city of Jericho. This story is now in chapter 6 of the book of Joshua. And so Hashem tells Yeshua that we're going to conquer the city of Jericho in a very special way. We're not going to use a regular military way of conquering it. We're going to conquer the city in a very unique and special way. How so? So it says like this. What you're going to do is you're going to have your army of men go around the city wall for 6 days. And there's going to be Kohanim, 7 Kohanim with them carrying shofars. And each day, as the men go around the city of Yericho, walk around the wall, so they're going to blow the shofar. And then, on the 7th day, while these Kohanim are blowing the shofar, when you're going around the city, all of a sudden the walls of the city are going to fall down, and then you're going to be able to easily come inside and conquer the city, and there won't be any problems. It'll take down all their fortifications, and ein baya, as they say in Hebrew. Okay? So that's what happens. Each day, they go, the Jewish army comes, the army of Yeshua comes, and they have the Aron, the Ark of the Covenant, traveling in front of them, traveling behind them, and they circle around the city once each day, with the Kohanim blowing their shofar. Comes the 7th day, they go around the city walls 7 times, the Kohanim blow the shofar, and indeed the walls of the city come tumbling down, and the Jews are able to come inside and conquer the city. And Yeshua gives them this whole speech. He says to them that, you know, when the walls are going to come down, so everyone should cry out in front of Hashem, and you know, and the walls are going to come down, and all the property that's inside the city should be consecrated to Hashem. It's called a cherem, consecrated to Hashem, and no one's allowed to use any of the property inside the city. It's going to be special holy, it's going to be donated to Hashem, either destroyed or donated to Hashem, and you have to kill all the people there, except for this lady Rachav, who helped save the spies. And everyone, he repeats himself, he says, you know, everyone make sure not to take the consecrated property. The property is not going to be for you. You don't take any booty from this war. It's all consecrated to Hashem. all the gold, the silver, the copper, all of that is going to go to the treasury of Hashem, of the Mishkan. You're not supposed to take any of the things. And so, of course, as I said, the walls come down. They go inside. They conquer the city. They killed. They consecrated all the people. They destroyed men, women, young, old, ox, sheep, donkeys. They were all killed, and they saved this lady Rahav. They saved her family, and they took all the consecrated property. And they burnt the property or the things that they took to the Mishkan to be part of the consecrated property for Hashem. So they took that and they brought it away, and that's the conquering of the city of Jericho. And then afterwards, Yeshua he says Vayashpa Yeshua. Yeshua got up and he made the people swear. He made them take an oath, and he said, Oru ha'ish lifnei Hashem, cursed. Cursed is the man in front of Hashem, Asher Yakum Ubano Esir Azayis Esiricho, who would come up and build the city of Jericho. Bevchara Yisadena, with his eldest son, he will lay the foundations of the city of Itziru Yatziv Delaseha, and with his youngest son, he will erect its gates or erect its doors. Meaning, Yeshua put a special curse on whoever would come and rebuild the city of Jericho, that while he's rebuilding it, his eldest son will die when he begins, and his youngest son will die when he finishes rebuilding the city. And we'll see that actually came to fruition later on in history. Now, this was the story of the conquering of Jericho. What happens for the next city? They go to a city called Ai, and they go fight in Ai, and in the city of Ai, they suffer a loss. And what happens is that Yeshua doesn't know why did the Jewish people lose. They had this miraculous intervention, and Hashem was helping them achieve this great victory in Jericho. And all of a sudden, the next battle, in a smaller city, they lost. The less fortified city, they lost. So they didn't understand what happened. And eventually it came out through the Urim V'Tumim, through the prophetic the lots of the Urim V'Tumim that the Kohen Gadol would wear. So there was a prophecy that told him that basically somebody had taken from the consecrated property, and he defiled it. And so that guy's name, his name was Achan. And this guy Achan, what he did was he saw certain pieces, certain Babylonian cloak that one of the idols that they found in the city of Jericho was wearing, and some sort of golden tongue or silver tongue that was used as some sort of idolatrous paraphernalia, and he thought it was very nice, and he wanted to take it for himself, even though it was really supposed to be consecrated property to be either taken, gotten rid of, or given to the Mishkan. And so he took this, and because of that, the Jewish people were collectively punished. Eventually he gave it back, and eventually they put him to death, they took away the things, and then they were able to conquer the city of Ai without any problems. It's an interesting thing, because we don't... there's a few interesting points about this. One point is that there's a tradition that tells us that after Yeshua conquered the city of Jericho, so because of this great miraculous intervention that Hashem did on behalf of the Jewish people to allow them to do this, to achieve this great victory, so Yeshua authored a prayer that we say every day called Aleinu L'Shabeach. There's different hints to the name of Yeshua in the prayer of Aleinu L'Shabeach. It says that he authored this prayer after the capturing of the city of Jericho. And the second part of Aleinu, of Al Kein Akav Alecha, the second paragraph, so some people say that Yeshua authored it, and some people say that this guy Achan, the guy who took from the consecrated property, he authored it before they put him to death. The prayer of Al Kein Akav Alecha is a request that we wish for the future messianic time when all of idolatry is going to be destroyed and everyone is going to universally recognize Hashem as one. So Achan, before they put him to death, he repented from his sin, because that's the halacha. Before you put someone to death, before you execute him, so he has to confess his sin. This is part of that. Maybe he authored this Al Kein Akav Alecha, this request for Hashem to bring the messianic era and destroy all idolatry. And they find a hint to this. Al Kein Akav Alecha is, if you take the first letter of each of the words, Al Kein Akav Alecha, Ayin Kaf Nun, that's the word Achan. So see, this a hint to the fact that Achan wrote this thing. But it's an interesting thing. Why did they consecrate the property of the land of the city of Jericho. They didn't do this by any of the other cities in the land of Canaan they conquered, but specifically by the city of Jericho. So Yeshua announced that all the property is going to be consecrated, you know, either destroyed or given over to the Mishkan, but you're not allowed to take anything for yourself. Why was that? So one of the answers that's given is because the city of Jericho was conquered on Shabbos. Right? According to the calculation, Chaf Ches Nisan, the seventh day of them circling the city, the seventh day, Chaf Ches, comes out to be Chaf Ches Nisan, the 28th of the month of Nisan, according to the calculation, came out on Shabbos. And because Hashem told them specifically to conquer the city on Shabbos, so it had a certain status that they weren't allowed to do it for themselves. They were doing it more for Hashem, more for, you know, for the sake of the Holy Land and for the sake of punishing the Canaanites who were deserving of being destroyed because of their idolatry, different things like that. But they're not doing it for themselves, so they couldn't pocket any of the property. That's one understanding. Another understanding is that it's similar to the concept of truma or challah. Right? There's a halacha that when a person makes a certain amount of dough, right? So that you're supposed to take off a certain amount of that dough and give it to the kohen as what we call challah. It's like it's a certain type of truma that you give to the kohen that comes from a dough. It's called challah. Or nowadays that we don't have a kohen, so maybe you burn it. Whatever, it's a bracha you make. It's like it's a whole halachas. But this halacha of taking off from the dough. So when the Torah talks about it, it's called reishis arisei seichem, the first of your dough. Right? When you give off a consecrated thing to the kohen, it's called the first. Why is it the first of your dough? It's not the first of your dough. I made a big fat dough and I take a little piece off and I give it. You see that there's a certain connection between consecrating something and it being the first. So because of that, Jericho, which was the first of the cities that they conquered, they consecrated it and they didn't keep the property for themselves. Yeah.
How big is that piece supposed to be?
Okay, so according to the Torah, there's no set amount. So elu dvarim she'ein lahem shir. It doesn't have any set amount from the Torah. Even a little bit, that's already good according to the Torah. The rabbis said that depending on, let's say, your outlook in life, so you take either a 40th, a 50th, or a 60th. Hmm. Right. If you're very generous, so you give a 40th. If you're stingy, you give a 60th. If you're somewhere in the middle, you give a 50th. That's Allah. The third explanation, why did they consecrate property of Jericho and not any of the other cities, is because for some reason they looked at Jericho as the Ira Nidachas. There's Allah in the Torah, in Deuteronomy, that if a city becomes, a Jewish city becomes, a majority of the city becomes idolaters, so then the city collectively is looked at as an idolatrous city, and the city is completely supposed to be completely destroyed. Even the minority who were not idolaters, everyone is supposed to be destroyed. All the property is supposed to be destroyed. Everything, right? So even the property. So because of that, they looked at Jericho as this idolatrous city, and even the property was destroyed. It wasn't taken for themselves. It's a little bit difficult because this halacha of Ir Nidachas only applies to a Jewish city. It doesn't apply to a non-Jewish city. So you have to know exactly why they specifically applied it in this instance. Also, if most of the Canaanites were idolaters, as we understand, so why did the city of Jericho stand out from all the other cities? Not so clear.
And it wasn't destroyed, it was given to the...
Huh?
The booty wasn't destroyed, it was given to the...
Well, no, only the gold, silver, and copper was given over to the Mishkan. All the rest of the things were destroyed. So some things were destroyed and some things were given over to the Mishkan. There's another point that it says that afterwards it says that Yeshua put a curse on anyone who would rebuild the city of Jericho. So, you know, his oldest son would die, and then as he's finishing, his youngest son would die. So that actually, that curse came to fruition, as I mentioned before, hundreds of years later in the Book of Kings. The Book of Kings, Kings 1, chapter 16, towards the end of the chapter, it says in the time of Achav, the king of Yisrael, Achav, it says in his time, a man named Chiel Beis Ha'eli built Jericho, And as he's building it, the foundation, his eldest son Aviram died. And as he was putting up the door to the city, so his youngest son Skuv died. So you see that this curse that Yeshua put on whoever would rebuild the city of Jericho, the curse actually came to fruition. Now it could be that this curse only applied to the person who would rebuild it right after it was destroyed. So this guy was the first guy to rebuild it. But to rebuild it again, a third time, a second time, let's say, wouldn't be a problem. Right? Because the curse already happened, it was fulfilled, and then now it's not a problem to rebuild it. So now there is in contemporary times, there is a city of Jericho. It does continue to exist. It's an Arab city. There's a lot of Arabs that live there. It's run by, as I said before, it's run by the Palestinian Authority. It does exist. It's not a completely destroyed city. Fine, that's one thing. So the walls of Jericho. There's this story of the walls of Jericho. There's a lot of interesting ideas that come out from the story of the walls of Jericho. It's an interesting thing that archaeologists have dug down. Oh, well, we'll say that in a moment. The Mishnah in Maseches Brachos, in the last chapter of Maseches Brachos, talks about different things that you make a special bracha on something that you see or you experience. Like if you experience an earthquake or thunder or light, or you see lightning, or you see the Mediterranean Sea, or you see great mountains, all these different things. There's different brachas, different natural phenomena that you might see. One of the things that's mentioned over there in the Gemara on Brachas Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph is that if you see the walls of Jericho, make a special bracha. Baruch Sh'asa Nisim Laviseinu B'Makom Hazeh. Blessed is he who made miracles for our forefathers in this place. That's a special bracha you make on seeing the walls of Jericho. Now, the way the Mishnah says it, it says, if you see the walls of Jericho that were swallowed into the ground. That's what the Mishnah says. So the question is, if you look carefully in the Psukim, in the book of Joshua, it never says that the walls were swallowed into the ground. I never said it was swallowed into the ground. It just said it fell down. Nofal. It fell. It doesn't say Nivlu'u, it became swallowed into the ground. So where does the Mishnah get this idea that the walls of Jericho were swallowed into the ground, that it just fell down? So the Gemara talks about this, and the Gemara says, you're right, the Psukim, the verses, the Bible itself only explicitly says that it fell, but we have a tradition that the walls were swallowed into the ground. Because if the walls just fell, then that wouldn't accomplish anything. The Gemara says, why? Because, this is very interesting, Gemara. The Gemara says that the thickness of the wall of Jericho was the same as the height of the wall. And so if the wall would fall, so then the thickness would just be the height, and the height would be the thickness, and you wouldn't gain anything, you wouldn't be able to penetrate the city. Right? So it couldn't be that the walls just fell, it had to be that the walls were swallowed into the ground. That's the Gemara's reasoning. And how did you know that the wall was swallowed? We have this tradition that the height and the width were equal, and therefore, if it would have fallen, it wouldn't have achieved anything. So it had to be that it was swallowed under the ground. It's an interesting thing that I was reading about this on Wikipedia. That archaeologists have actually found by Jericho, they found the walls of the city, and it is the oldest city walls that they've ever found. Now the problem is that the way the archaeologists date the walls of the city of Jericho, so it comes out that the walls are that wall is much older than the conquest of Yeshua, the way they date it. It comes out that it's older than Yeshua, like a few thousand years, like maybe 1,000 years before Yeshua, something like 1,000 years before, maybe even more than 1,000 years before. So it's like they use that to discount the account that we have in the Bible of the Jewish people conquering the city of Jericho, because they say, they found these walls, and these walls, they predated Yeshua's conquest. But I think that they're making a logical flaw over here, because the way they date the walls, the way archaeologists date things, is based on how low down it was, which strata. There's different layers, archaeological layers, that they find things in, and depending on which layer it was in, so that's how they date it, right? But if the Gemara tells us that the wall was swallowed into the ground, right? So you would expect it to be found in a layer that would predate when the story happened, because it's supposed to be underground, right? So they're asking a kasha on our tradition, on what it says in Tanakh, but the kasha doesn't make any sense, because if you take what our tradition swallowed underground, what the Gemara says, so then it makes sense that it would be in a place that in an earlier layer, in an earlier strata of the archaeological record. So that's that's one of my thoughts. Make sense? There's a story once. I was going on a date. You know how yeshiva guys go on dates? They go to. It's a very delicate balance, right? You want to go to a public place because you don't want to do yichud, but on the other hand, you also want to have like some privacy so you could like actually like talk to someone and not be like with the whole crowd. So you're trying to like go to a public place yet have some sort of privacy, right? So. You know, one of the common things that yeshiva guys do in order to play both of these ends is you go to a hotel. You hang out like in a lobby of a hotel or outside a hotel. You hang out outside of a public place. And so one time I was going on a date and we were at a hotel and we were walking outside and we were walking around the building of the hotel. We walked around like a few times. And I said to her, we have to be careful. If we walk around 7 times, the building might fall down. Of course, you didn't get the joke. Yeah, my luck, right? So there's an interesting thing that the Rekeach says. The Rekeach is one of the Hasidic Ashkenaz from the 1200s in Germany. So the Rekeach writes that what we do on Sukkot, when we took the Lulav and Esrog, and we go around the Bima each day, 6 days of Sukkot, and then on the seventh day, we go around 7 times, so one of the reasons behind that is as a remembrance for the way we conquered the city of Jericho, where we ran around the city for 6 days once, and then on the seventh day we went around 7 times and conquered it. So Rekeach connects these two things. Some people take it even further. The next day, after Hoshana Rabbah, after we go around 7 times, so the next day in Shemini Atzeres, or what we call it in Shemini Atzeres, or Simchas Torah, so what do? We go around the Bima 7 times with the Sefer Torah. So first we go around with the Lulav and Esrog for 6 days, and then on the seventh day we do it 7 times. And then on the eighth day, we go around 7 times with the Sefer Torah. So they say that the idea is that on Sukkot, you're trying to bring down the walls of Tumah, the walls of impurity, or the walls of idolatry. That's the idea of what Sukkot is. So you go around 7 times, breaking down the walls. On the eighth day, you go around to the Sefer Torah. Now you're building up a wall. Now you're building up the walls of holiness. Right? You're separating yourself from the outside in terms of showing how we're building a wall of holiness to separate, associate ourselves with the Torah with the inside, and separating ourselves from the outside. That's the Shem Yishmuel says this idea, the going around 7 times with the Sefer Torah, that's to now build up a wall of holiness. Alright, the city of Jericho comes up also elsewhere in Tanakh. In the time of Elisha, there was a whole thing where the waters were bitter in the city of Jericho, and Elisha made a miracle to make the water sweetened. There's other things about Jericho, but I think we're gonna stop over here. All right, thank you for coming.